It's Saturday morning. It's 2021, but it's still 10 o'clock, and this is still the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And if Adam sounds like he's a little further away than normal, it's because he's a little further away than normal. Adam's up in the hill country, as they say, North Carolina. I trust it's better today weather-wise.
Yes, it's not raining. It's really foggy and overcast, though. And I'm in South Carolina, not North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
But close enough.
Did you get up to the Biltmore yet, or are you going yet?
We're going right after the show.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, anybody who has been to the Biltmore up in Asheville during Christmas season knows that when you do that house up, it's even more spectacular than it is during the rest of the year. But my gosh, what they do for Christmas is just phenomenal. If you like the sights and the sounds of the season, it is quite a trip. I trust you'll have a good time.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
I'm not surprised.
The kids have never been, so they'll enjoy that as well.
Mm-hmm. I've probably never seen a house quite that large, huh?
No, definitely not. Calling it a house almost is almost ridiculous to think that was a house.
Yeah, it's a testimonial to what you could do in the old days with a boatload of money and no income tax. Something to think about.
Exactly.
Do you know, all of you out there, do you know that you paid more in taxes than you did in the combination of things like food and medicine and rent and all that stuff last year? That's a little something to make you think. Now, there are some people who would like to have your percentage go up even a little bit more. You can count me out of that one. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about your money, and boy, is that a fun topic right now. But first, I want to welcome everybody to a new year. I was listening to Howard and Angela say this is the kickoff of their 10th year. Well, next month, February 1st, will be the kickoff of our 7th year. And try as we might, we just can't seem to catch up to them. I don't know why that is. Although percentage-wise, yeah, we're closing the gap percentage-wise, little by little. But we will be here right along the way, as we promised before and always will. So keep tuning in, and you'll get more and more. There's so many things unsettled yet that are going to impact your money in the year 2021. We'll try to bring them along as they get, codified, put into law. And what to do about them is our job to tell you. Anyway, new people, if you're just tuning in for the first time, either by accident or on purpose, try to stick around for a while. Of course, we will have a trivia question and just all kinds of topics that we want to talk about. If you would like to change the tone of the show and pick a new topic, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will go to the head of the class. All right, money. Since we're here to talk about money, most of us have more of it than we did last year. And that is due to an unbelievable market. And we didn't go from A to B in a straight line. And that's the truth. Now take it away.
Yeah, we didn't go in a straight line at all. There wasn't a straight line in the year, in fact. It was all a lot of ups and downs and some really steep, big downs and then some really quick rebounds. So it was an interesting year, no doubt about it. And I think that having it in the books brings a big sigh of relief from everybody. I don't think anyone necessarily enjoyed 2020. And if you did, that's you might be the only one. So
masochist.
It was a year of craziness. We saw a lot of things happen we never would have thought would happen. And then the reactions to those things were also surprising. So it was just surprise on top of surprise, and I don't think everyone will ever forget 2020, but I don't think anyone will ever look back and say, man, that was a fun year.
No. I've tried the patience of virtually everybody.
No doubt about it. It's hard to even describe or put into words. But it was a year where we saw markets plummet faster than they have ever plummeted. We had Black Monday Part 2, where global equities plunged 12 to 13% in a day. And in the U.S., that accounted for the largest point drop in U.S. history, although it was not the single largest day of loss. It was, percentage-wise, it was the single biggest point drop. During this stretch in March, the Dow lost more than 6,400 points in 4 days, or about 26% of its total value. Despite all of this, we go into 2021 with solid gains, as long as we didn't go crazy and sell off equities at any point this year. You had to stay invested this year to make money because, as usual, all of the gains came from about 5 trading days in the market. And if you were out for those 5 days, your portfolio would have been down for the year. So just a really good lesson in why you shouldn't freak out. You should pick an asset allocation and you should stick with it and be proactive about investing, but don't be reactive about investing because it does not work out for you.
Plan, then invest.
So for the year, the Dow closed up just over 7%. The S&P was up over 16%, and the NASDAQ was up a pretty astonishing 43.6%. And if you hold QQQ, which we do, and that's an ETF that tracks the 100 best stocks on the NASDAQ, that one is up over was up over 48%, and if you look from the March 23rd lows, it was up over 85%. Pretty astounding.
The trivia question, by the way, is going to be about the QQQ.
Okay, great. Despite predictions to the contrary, value stocks continued to lag growth stocks in 2020. The S&P 500 Value ETF, IVE, was up just over 1% this year, while the growth equivalent ETF, IVW, was up more than 33%. And if you look at the overall S&P ETF, SPY, it ended up right in the middle, as it should have, 18.5% gains. Small and mid-cap stocks finally played a little bit of catch-up in late 2020, but again, they were split by growth and value. The mid-cap growth ETF, IJK, was up 22.6 this year, while the mid-cap value ETF was up just 3.8%. So pretty big disparities based on growth versus value this year. And that's been a trend we've been tracking for quite a few years now.
Yeah.
And we keep thinking it's going to reverse, and it still hasn't.
But it will.
It will, eventually. It always has happened. And I don't think this is the longest run on record, but it might be the biggest divergence we've seen in recent history.
Mm-hmm. That's partly due to some tax law that's still up in the air that could affect the value of those dividends.
Absolutely true. That's a big one, because if the Senate goes Democrat, the value of those dividends that you receive is going to go down dramatically, specifically for wealthy investors, which in a lot of ways are who control the market. So that's something to keep an eye on going into next year. I've got a lot more to wrap up about 2020, and I'll just have to do it on the other side of the break.
No problem. And one other thing, when we're talking about dividend stocks, first off, I still love them. I like the concept of getting something for holding something. But you will notice that if the dividend-paying companies, which are the value companies, if they look out and say, uh-oh, our corporate taxes are going to go up by a factor of 15 or 20% or 30% or whatever, then our board of directors would owe it to the shareholders to reduce the dividend level. So it's both ways that you look at it, that it can be hurt. All right, we're going to take a little bitty break, and I'll come in with the trivia. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And then Adam, as you may have heard, is remoting from South Carolina. I stood corrected on that one. Where they're hoping to get up to the Biltmore House and see the spectacular sights and sounds of a waning Christmas season. But meanwhile, there's some work to do. More about the market. I don't think that people are going to easily forget this year, any investors or any advisors. It has been such a weird one, and it, as you alluded to in the first segment, I think it secured some basic premises that we use in the market, which is, I hate the term buy and hold, because that's not what I mean. It's invest and stay invested, but plan first and invest later so you know what your risks are. You know how you're mitigating the overall risk. You never, ever want to have your portfolio return as much as a QQQ did this year, because that means you are completely under-diversified, and next time the tech takes a bath, you're going to take a bath with it. So there's lessons to be learned here, and we should all stick to them. All right, carry on.
All right. Did you want to do the trivia first, though?
Thank you. Absolutely right. Right on top of things this morning. As always, brought to you by Ken Dales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Adam mentioned the QQQ, the large NASDAQ stocks. That's an exchange-traded fund, or ETF. It was the top performer for 2020. It had a return of 48.7%. Spectacular in anybody's book. What was the second best performing ETF? If you get this one, I will give you personally a big attaboy.
That's not exactly right. There were actually ETFs that outperformed QQQ.
But that's true. Of the standard domestic things. Now, I don't want to go into, put it a better way then. I know I don't have that worded precisely right. The major mainstream, that's the word I've been looking for, mainstream ETFs. I'm not counting certain country ETFs and things like that.
Well, there were a few technology ETFs that outperformed.
The word I need is non-technology. What's the best performing non-technology ETF domestically? How's that? It's a little more complicated to answer it right, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's heavily traded and has a very large hundreds of millions of dollars invested in it. So, okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about the foreign markets in 2020. They were pretty mixed, with some big gainers and some big losers, and then everything in between. China was the biggest gainer, ironically, up more than 36%. Brazil was one of the biggest losers, down more than 20%. To achieve a loss of just 20%, Brazil's market had to climb more than 81% from its low in March, and it still lost 20%. And if you add those together, that's 101%. But as you know, when the market climbs, it actually has to go further than when it falls percentage-wise.
Twice as hard to make money as to lose it, numerically.
That's correct.
Yep.
European stock markets were the most mixed, with Germany posting a gain of more than 10% on the year, while the UK was down more than 11%. Spain posted a small loss, while France posted a small gain. And the other countries were just kind of all over the place. And it's interesting. You would think that maybe it was directly correlated to COVID outbreaks, but Spain and France and the UK all got hit pretty hard, so it didn't seem to be directly correlated to that. And I'm not sure how that all shook out, but there was a pretty wide disparity in the European countries. Emerging markets also clawed back from big losses in March to have a decent year. The ETF EEM, which is one of the most popular emerging markets ETFs, it posted a gain of almost 17% for the year. Commodities did fairly well in 2020, despite energy prices plummeting. Oil rose 6.5% in December alone to end the year down more than 67%. So even with that gain, oil did not have a great year.
That's a demand problem, the way I see it.
Definitely. Natural gas, kind of the same story, although that was just a really volatile asset this year. It dropped another 13% in December to post a loss of more than 45% for the year. And the index was able to sort of balance that out with some gains on the other commodities. One of the less talked about storylines this year has been the fixed income markets. Money poured into bonds during the COVID crash, raising bond prices basically through the roof, sending yields down into the basement. And there still today, there's been a little bit of improvement in yields, but not much. The aggregate bond market ETF, AGG, posted a gain of 7.5% in 2020. TIP, the popular ETF that tracks TIPS, gained over 10%, while the long treasury ETF, TLT, posted a gain of 18.25%. But if you were following that earlier in the year, it was up closer to 30. So it's come back down a decent ways.
The broad bond market just about exactly equaled the S&P return. So stocks and bonds were both doing great. But at one point, the bond market had a 50% lead this year in March. And by the end of the year, it had given it all back.
Yeah, the two, if you track the two charts, they were almost identical, inverse
right.
of each other. The bond market was rising rapidly when stocks were falling rapidly, and then they ended the year basically close to tied.
Hey, hang on just a second, Adam.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello, Ron.
How are you, gentlemen?
We're wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
What's happening? Happy New Year,
well,
by the way.
Happy New Year to you, sir. I was going to take a shot at the trivia question, but I also had a comment to make.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the $600 stimulus check that I'm going to receive is enough to cover airfare to Pakistan to see how the $10 million that we're spending for gender research is doing.
I wouldn't count on it.
No, I don't think so.
Unless you're married with a bunch of kids and don't make
any
money.
Airfares are pretty cheap right now. You know,
yeah,
that's
true. Well, you can at least, I'll bet you get you one way.
Yeah, because I'm really interested in what they're doing with that $10 million in gender research.
Mm-hmm, you and me, and I think potentially millions of people.
Yes.
We'll probably have to talk about that a little bit more as time goes on, but right now it's just such a tender subject for most of us.
Ron, it's interesting you brought that up, Ron. I actually woke up yesterday morning and checked my bank account, and I had a deposit from the IRS, which I think was a stimulus payment, but I honestly don't know. I didn't think they were supposed to go out until later this week, so I was kind of surprised to see it there.
Well, maybe you're a preferred taxpayer.
I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same boat. As of January 4th, we got our $1,200 already, my wife and I.
Wow. Okay. Nice, I guess.
I'll take it. Better than a sharp stick in the eye.
I sure as heck would.
Yeah. But I was going to say GLD for the ETF.
Boy, that would be a good guess, except it's not right. I think that was only up in the 17 or 18% range, something like that. Not good enough to qualify for the big ranking, but still a good idea.
Gold actually had gains of about 24%.
24? Okay. Had a good end of the year then. That's good. You know, that always performs in a time of uncertainty, and so it did. And we had a lot of uncertainty. So not a surprise. Okay. Very good thinking. I like your thought process a lot. But it just wasn't quite right.
That's no way I ever got.
Well, we try not to hurt too bad.
I appreciate it. Fellas, have a great
new
year.
Thanks, Ron. We appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah, we don't want to be too good or too bad with our doling out of answers and statistics, I guess. But, yeah, a lot of you folks out there will be getting some, I call them son of stimulus checks. I got more to say about all that later, too. And if you don't, congratulations, it means you made a lot of money. So things could be worse.
But it's not necessarily that you made it recently.
Right.
I can't. They said they were going to base it off of last year's taxes.
2019.
I'm not convinced that they actually did that. And then I tried to calculate the formula to see how much we would get, and then we got a different amount. So I'm not sure that they're abiding by their own stated rules. If anyone knows or can prove one way or another what year they looked at or how they calculated it, please call in and let us know, because I've been trying and so far I've been unsuccessful.
Adam, after you had told me that, I got thinking about it, and I wondered, what I read said it was based on 2019 returns. Do you think they meant 2018 returns filed in 2019? Did you check that out?
That math would make more sense for the amount that I got. I would have to go back and check, but thinking about it, that would make a lot more sense.
And you also know with this one, because the amount, it's a phased out. You get up to the $75,000 for a single, $150,000 for a couple. It phases out, but since this payment was only half of the other one. It phases out way quicker. So you got to make sure you apply the quicker formula to it if you're going to get it.
I did.
You did try that?
It reduced $5 for every $100 that you make over the income threshold. Right. So, okay.
Mike is on the line. Mike, can I ask you to hold over? We've only got about 20 seconds before the break comes, and it wouldn't be fair to try to fit you in there. So just hang tough, and we'll get you immediately after the break. We'll go into some other things like GDPs and stimulus plans and all that right after the break. A lot of good stuff to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have a trivia question open. We are in the new year now, so everybody gets a pass. If you won too many times in the past, well, actually, we don't enforce that. We talk about it, but we don't do it. So feel free to give us a call, 904-222-8255. We're looking for the mainstream ETF. That's a good word for it, I think, that performed almost as well as the QQQ. It was up in the high 40s also. And it might surprise a few people, as we always try to do. Meanwhile, on the phone, good morning, Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year to both of you.
Same to you and many more.
Thank you. I sold it recently because it went considerably high. It was a solar ETF from Invesco, and the symbol was TAN, which did quite well.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that one. It could continue to do well depending on the 20th. Well, it would be a very excellent guess. It just isn't a correct one.
Okay.
But I think if you're looking for asset classes that should things go as sort of planned right now by most people, on the 20th of January, I think I would take a really good look at those ETFs that do cover the alternative energies, because you know there's going to be a lot of money thrown their way. A lot of money.
I agree.
One thing Adam and I have been saying since this whole thing took place in November is that as soon as we understand what direction it's going, we're going to get everything we have on the sidelines back in, because there's going to be money spent. I just want to know if it's going to go a little bit left or a little bit right, and we'll determine which way. But there's no such thing as sitting it out in our book. You got to participate when all that money's on the line.
I agree 100%. I remember I called about a month ago, and I was concerned about I asked if you thought that, you know, they always make predictions when a new president is coming in,
right,
as to what it's going to do for the market and would it be better under a Republican and a Democrat. And you gentlemen aptly put that you can't really predict and you can't base your investment decisions on a political party or a political theme. You just have to see what happens.
The strategic part of that is absolutely true. Tactically, you can make some moves that are based on some of that, but staying in is staying in, and it really does work if you're patient. And if you don't have 5 years in the market to keep your money in there, then shouldn't be in it anyway. So that's a mistake that so many people make.
Very well put.
So Mike,
all right, let me continue
ETF,
listening.
Mike, your ETF actually did outperform the one that Steve is talking about.
Oh, then
yeah.
Then let's say, I think in that case, let's give it to him, because I did not introduce the question the right way, and I would say that was excellent. So I'll give you the answer that I had also, and I've got another question on that, but you'll have to wait till next week to get it. But the second one of all that, what we call the mainstream, is silver. So, you know, when Ron guessed gold, his thinking was 100% spot on, that this was a great year for the precious metals, because they usually, at least, will boom in a time of great uncertainty. So well done to you, well done to Ron, and everybody's happy now, except maybe Ron, but sorry. Anyway, very well done. I'll put you on hold, and Alan will get your name and address. And I think you have well earned it. Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you guys. Let's hope for a much better year this year.
Thanks. We do.
Definitely.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. I ran across a a researcher that is recommending Bitcoin. Can you tell me what that is and what's it all about?
I can't because I don't know. I have an old saying that says, if you can't explain it to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes, what the heck is it doing in your portfolio? I do not know. I do not care to know. I wish I owned some because someone had given it to me, but I wouldn't have purchased it. It's crazy to me. Last week we had a caller, and I suggested to him that he check the name Peter Schiff. Yeah, Peter Schiff is a very well-known investor in the Northeast, and I'm sure has made an absolute boatload of money on the market. But he had some, and he had it on a flash drive, and something happened to the drive and quit working, and there is no way to get it back. If the flash drive failed, it's just gone. Now, I don't want anything so esoteric in my portfolio that a little computer glitch could wipe out my holdings. That's one of the things I have against it. Now, I'm going to let Adam talk about this too, and I suspect you're going to get perhaps a different viewpoint on it because of our age difference.
A slightly different one. It's much like a currency that we deal with, like the dollar. It is a store of value but it doesn't have a physical presence. It only exists in cyberspace. So it's sort of like cash for the next century. At this point, it's so new. It's so highly, highly volatile. If you have a bunch of money and want to allocate a percent of your portfolio to it, I have no problem with that. I would not get too heavy into it. I don't think it's established enough at this point. I don't think that anything that is supposed to be a store of value should be able to increase by over 100% in a year, much less, I think it went from 6,000 to 20,000 this year. So it's just way too volatile. If it can go up that fast, it can go down that fast. And I'm just not ready to start using it in our portfolios, but I do have clients that have money in it and have done quite well this year. So
yeah.
It's one of those sort of fledgling asset classes that if you're going to put some money in, just make sure you can afford to lose it.
Yeah, and we would never recommend it to anyone because we are both certified financial planners and we are regulated by the state. And if we start making that kind of recommendations, they're going to be mightily unhappy with us. Mightily unhappy. So you can't allow a client to take that much risk. On the other hand, if a client tells us, and this is the way our business works, buy this for my portfolio, we do that. That's a direct order. We take it. We document it as such, a direct order. We are then not responsible for the way it acts one way or the other. Can't take the credit if it goes up. Can't take the blame if it goes down. That's how it works.
Okay, I still don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Well,
I tried my best. It's
a promise.
It's just really that hard to describe.
Yeah, it really is. It's just a promise that somebody says, I'll pay you in Bitcoin. And if the person accepts a promise and takes a coin thinking it's going to either go up or stay the same, it's up to them. But it's an individual-to-individual thing. But also, stick this in the back of your mind. There's somebody out there who is not happy about this. And that somebody has three initials. First one's I, and the second one's R, and the third one is S. Why? Because this is used too frequently to avoid taxation. And then, there's all those 50 states that have revenue departments, too, who are not happy. You got a lot of powerful enemies in this arena. That's not true if you're going to buy the ETF. That's bought and sold openly. The price is the price. You pay taxes on the gain. You can carry the loss forward. That's not true. But if you're going to go into using Bitcoin, that's a different story altogether.
Is there an ETF for Bitcoin?
Yes. I think it's BITC. Is that right, Adam? The one that's dollar denominated?
There's actually several now, and they all treat it a little bit differently. But let me see. That sounds right. I just want to double check it before I say for sure. Give me one second here. It is BTC USD, I believe.
Okay,
is
BTC, Bitcoin.
CoinDesk. Yeah, it's something like that. But
about 30 grand a share right now.
If you look around, you'll see plenty of options for investing in Bitcoin. Just try and find a widely traded ETF that has several hundred million in assets.
Now, on Bitcoin's not the only only currency of its type. There are really, I think there are hundreds of them. So if you want to start doing some research, you will be looking it up for a long, long time. But maybe they'll teach you more than we can.
Okay. Thank you very much, anyhow.
We appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's one when it first came out, Adam and I got kind of on the leery end of it, and I have not gotten off of it yet. It seems to be becoming more mainstream, but it's not any easier for me to digest than it was when it first came out, because I still absolutely cannot give you a succinct definition of it. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have solved our trivia question, maybe not in the exact way we thought, but I think I have learned a little bit of something. I hope other people have too. That's about that. How do you treat things tactically when you think there's some changes coming? And we'll talk more about that, obviously, especially over the next month. I got a little forecasting story for you. 2 weeks ago, we read in the mainstream financial media that somebody was predicting that the market would go up 5% in the next 2 weeks. So the last 2 weeks of the year would raise 5%. So I checked it to see what would happen, and here's what happened. The Dow went up 1.8%, the NASDAQ went up 4.12%, and the S&P 500 went up 2.3%. So nobody quite met it. I'd call it, at best, just sort of a bit of a miss. Now, it just happens that the guy who did that is a very well-known guy that Adam pretty much grew up with, and my wife knew him in high school. I've known him for almost 45 years. You've probably seen him on all of the big shows. His name is Tom DeMarc, and Tom is a well-known charting specialist. He's made a lot of money. He's very successful, actually a lot of fun, too. He's a good guy. And he said something after that I hope he's dead wrong on. He said he'd go up 5% in the next 2 weeks, and then his second half of that sentence was, but then watch out. So let's hope that just doesn't happen. I'm certainly not going to bank on it.
I don't know. I'm kind of in his camp on this one. And I'm usually pretty optimistic, but
yes,
right now valuations are really out of whack. The thing about that is when you combine that with the historic, well, not historically high, but above historic normal level of bullish sentiment, and bear sentiment being only at 26%, while bullish is at 46%, it's a little bit of irrational exuberance. I don't know. I'm really not loving the market right now, and I think we do need to be prepared for the possibility of a little bit of a decline here.
Well, we did prepare for it with our clients, most of them, anyway, the ones who agreed that this was probably a good idea. We have parked some money on the sideline. It's not 50% or anything like that, but we have a significant sum of money waiting until all this settles down. We get all the answers politically, economically, tax-wise, the whole thing. And then we're going to get back in. But we're not going to do it just 100%, throw it all in the market and say, this is probably going up again. I think this one requires a little thought, but I sure wouldn't be selling any more out of it either. That's a big difference. All right, let's talk about China. It's always fun to talk about China, right? Now, China revised its official GDP growth rate down for the year 2019. Did you see that, Adam?
I did not. I missed that.
They knocked it down from 6.1% to 6%. Pretty big, huh? Now, someone pointed out, this is one of those useless stories that somebody's got to take up some time and space. Someone pointed out that the revision downward was the size of the Ghana GDP. Apples...
Wow.
Tomatoes, really, people? gross domestic product was 435 billion yuan or 67 billion smaller, which is about the size of the entire economy of Ghana, which means nothing. So my question, brother, is, all right, China revised it down by a tenth of one-tenth from 6.1 to 6. Now, do you trust the results? Do you believe that number? If you do, you don't know too much about China. I'd take it with a grain of salt at best.
I don't know. I don't think it's as far off as people like to speculate that it is. I think that the evolution of the middle class in China is going to give them a solid 4 to 5% a year for the foreseeable future. When you're bringing that many people out of poverty to become consumers, and that's a trend that's been happening for 20 years now, but it continues to happen, and it's happening more and more. And I think that that alone, the consumer, them going towards a consumer-oriented society is going to give them that kind of growth rate, even in bad years.
Well, I just tend to have a major distrust of all numerical things that come out of there. So time will tell, won't it? Speaking of China, can you tell me what these three things have in common? China Telecom Corporation Limited, China Mobile Limited, and China Unicom Hong Kong Limited. What do they have in common right now? Any idea?
No clue.
They are being delisted from the New York Stock Exchange as we speak, and they will be out somewhere between the 7th and the 11th of January. Why? Because back in 1999, Congress passed a law that mandated the Department of Defense compile a list of Chinese military companies. Guess when the Pentagon complied with that 1999 law?
Yesterday?
Actually, day before, because it was the year 2020. They have designated 35 companies, and it includes CNOOC, the big oil company, and a big semiconductor manufacturing. But these three are in the process of being delisted. Now, the bad news for them is that people will not have access to those stocks on the New York Exchange. The good news for them is you can always buy them on the Hong Kong Exchange if you want to. But I thought it was interesting that the Pentagon, which is a big, ripe cesspool of money spending, not the military, the Pentagon, they are not what I would call an efficient organization, and it needs a lot of help. But from 1999 to 2020, they didn't comply with this law.
Does that surprise you?
No, but I wish it would. I really do wish it would. All right. Here's some more goodies. Let's see. How about Robin Hood getting fined $65 million? Because any of you who know what Robin Hood is, it's a trading platform that they're targeting mostly young people with not too much money. And it's free. So you go in there with some money, and they'll sell you things that we wouldn't begin to sell you, options and stuff like that. But it got pretty popular. But then somebody figured something out just recently, and that something was that when something's free, the cost can be excessive. And that's what happened with Robinhood. There's something in our industry that's called best execution, and we're all responsible for it. It means when an order is placed, you have to make sure that your custodian, trading desk, whatever you're using, gets that at the best available price quickly. Well, it seems that Robinhood is, maybe not as quickly and maybe not as efficient at making those trades as it should be. So people are not making as much money as they should or would in a different platform. And this young little startup company just got handed a bill for $65 million as the penalty for doing what they're doing. You got to be careful, folks. You just got to be careful. Nobody's going to take care of you like you will or can ask us, and we'll try to help. Another one. I'm just looking through some of these. 1.55 million old people getting ripped off. It just goes on and on and on. But I'm not going to dwell on that. How about one thing before we go? Is your stimulus check taxable income? You know the answer to that, Adam?
It is not.
Correct. All right. If you suspect that you didn't earn this check with your income or whatever, then are you required to pay it back?
You are not.
Also correct. So if you get a phone call from someone pitching a service to get it for you quicker, are you talking to the real thing or are you about to get your face ripped off?
You are about to get ripped off.
Hey, you're 3 for 3 so far. How about that?
I've done my homework.
Uh-huh. That is not taxable income. No one will call you from IRS or anything else. You can't speed up the process. If you don't get it and you think you deserve it, there is a process that you can follow to get your bank account to IRS, and you will eventually get it. Don't waste too much of your life trying to get that immediately or hurry it up, because they're pretty busy these days, and you will get it. Just follow up on it. But if you need to know how to do that, you can just Google it or Bing it or whatever you want to do and find out exactly how you take care of those things yourself, and you'll then get the money. That's it. Well, we'll see you next week. Happy New Year, everybody. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.